You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
G'day, Tobia here for this week's edition of Stick Together, the only national program focusing on union news, worker stories and social justice issues. This program is produced in Naarm, Melbourne, for 3CR and broadcast across the Community Radio Network with the support of the Community Broadcasting Foundation. On the stolen lands of the Kulin Nation, we recognise that our struggles are connected and stand in staunch solidarity with elders past, present and emerging. No one's free until we're all free. On today's episode, we will cover a few union stories that highlight our particular juncture in history and recognise the scale of the challenges that are presented to us before going to the main piece of the show, which is a translated excerpt from a webinar that was held on the 5th of March entitled Guerra alle donne, il prezzo del riarmo sulle nostre spalle, or translated, War on Women, the price of rearmament is on our shoulders. In anticipation for the International Working Women's Day, on the 8th of March, and the strike that was held in Italy on the 9th. The webinar was presented by USB, the Unione Sindacale di Base, the rank-and-file union from Italy that has been engaged on all fronts, social and economic, leading by example that the work of unions is in all aspects of social life, from contrasting the drive to war to pursuing disputes on economic or ethical grounds. Let's begin and get stuck into some news. Australia's ports face a pivotal shift with major implications for jobs, security and the economy. The Maritime Union of Australia warns that DP World, the Dubai-owned operator across key terminals, is pursuing AI and automation that could eliminate more than 1,000 skilled, unionised roles and concentrate control of critical supply chain infrastructure offshore. A report launched in Parliament argues this drive is motivated by cost-cutting and profit extraction, fueled by rising landside fees and minimal corporate tax contributions, rather than genuine efficiency gains. Reading from the statement released by the MUA on the 23rd of March, quote, amidst a global supply chain crisis and oil shock, the Maritime Union of Australia has called upon the Albanese government to swiftly regulate AI in strategically significant supply chain sectors like stevedoring and port services. The call comes as Dubai Ports, controlled container terminals across Australia, face an automation and AI control project being pushed by the multinational foreign owners. Dubai Ports operates four terminals in Brisbane, Sydney, Melbourne and Fremantle, and is effectively one half of the Australia container terminal duopoly. Dubai's Ports, Australian management team, is currently pushing an AI and automation agenda, fed to it by disgraced former global CEO Sultan Ahmed bin Sulaiman. Bin Sulaiman was named extensively in the Epstein files and was revealed as the identity behind the infamous torture video email, revelations which prompted him to step down as CEO of DP World. DP World is the world's fifth largest port operator, owned by the government of Dubai and Gulf royal families via offshore structures. The company extracts hundreds of millions of dollars annually from Australian businesses and consumers, but pays next to no tax in Australia. Despite years of rising revenues and fees charged to Australian businesses, DP World paid no corporate income tax in Australia for over a decade. Workers' wages and their taxes, around $70 million in 2025, make up the company's primary economic contribution. The Centre for International Corporate Tax Accountability and Research, alongside the Maritime Union of Australia, is launching the Job Losses and Profit Shifting at DP World, How AI Automation Threatens Australia's Economic Wellbeing report at Australian Parliament House today in Canberra. The report sets out how Dubai Ports aims to implement large-scale AI automation in Australia, threatening up to 1,000 jobs, over 60% of the workforce. The proposed automation would replace skilled, unionized roles with driverless vehicles and remote-operated cranes. The automation push conflicts with the Australian government's national AI plan, which requires worker and union consultation. Evidence suggests the primary goal is cutting labor costs and boosting profits, not improving supply chain efficiency. Increased profits are driven by higher landside fees, which are passed on to businesses and consumers, contributing to inflation. The Maritime Union has been pushing for a variety of supply chain sovereignty policy measures to inoculate the Australian community and economy from global shocks and interference, including the recent oil crisis caused by Trump's war on Iran, and the ripple effect being felt throughout the supply chain. The report comes at a critical juncture in Australia's maritime and strategic needs, with our island nation sitting at the end of a long global supply chain and significant physical constraints squeezing consumers and businesses in the first oil shock of the 21st century. The events of the last few weeks, which the MUA has been warning of for many years, highlights the need for Australian policymakers to bolster and broaden our sovereign infrastructure rather than to allow it to be diluted by foreign stevedoring behemoth owned and operated by the Dubai royal family. The recommendations of the report include enforcing strict oversight, transparency and accountability for AI systems in the workplace, protect worker data and ban invasive surveillance practices, ensure safety, job security, and public benefit are prioritized over corporate profit, guarantee full bargaining rights and protected industrial action when AI or automation is introduced, strengthen tax transparency and crack down on profit shifting and offshore royalty payments. MUA National Secretary Jake Field said regarding the report findings, quote, "This company's only economic contribution to Australia is through payroll tax and the income tax paid by its workers. Who Dubai-based executives want to replace with robots, but Dubai's robots don't pay tax. The MUA is standing up and fighting back against the global multinationals who want to throw Australian workers on the scrap heap while exposing our economy and community to immeasurably risky AI automation of critical infrastructure." Australia's fuel crisis is bound up with more than market failures. It's tied to violence and complicity. A decade of policy choices hollowed out our refineries and tanker fleet, leaving us dependent on foreign ships and overseas oil. Now, an illegal war in Iran has tightened global choke points, driving up prices and disrupting supply. But the consequences run deeper. Australia's political and military alignment with that campaign makes us complicit in the harms and alleged war crimes unfolding overseas, with dark consequences for justice at home and abroad. Staying with the MUA on this next issue, quoting from a statement released on the 11th of March, the Maritime Union of Australia is calling out the deliberate policy settings and economic engineering that have created Australia's perilous fuel security situation. Now, as much as ever, Australians need fuel to get to work and to do their work. Without fuel and oil and the ships that move it, Australia stops. As anxiety gathers in the community against a backdrop of escalating geopolitical tensions in the Middle East, the need for a strategic fleet of Australian-flagged and crewed ships operating in the national interest has never been more urgent. Conflict in Iran now threatens global shipping routes and constrains crude oil flows through one of the world's most critical energy choke points. But Australia has for a long time been dangerously exposed to these risks. After 10 years of betrayal during the Abbott-Turnbull-Morrison government, a period defined by political spin and empty assurances, the reality is simple. Australia no longer has the ships, the refineries, or the national planning capacity required to guarantee our own fuel supply. This crisis has not emerged overnight, nor in the last 4 years. It is the direct result of deliberate policy choices by neoliberal governments that dismantled Australia's maritime capacity and allowed our domestic refining capacity to collapse. In quick succession, around a decade ago, Australia lost every Australian-flagged coastal petroleum tanker under the Abbott-Turnbull-Morrison government's deliberate policy of undermining Australian shipping. In 2016, BP withdrew the British Fidelity, the last Australian crude tanker operating under the transnational general license system. In 2015, three Australian flag tankers disappeared from the fleet when refineries were shut down. Caltex withdrew the Alexander Spirit following the closure of the Kurnell refinery. The Hooghly Spirit was removed when Caltex closed refining operations at Lytton. BP withdrew the British loyalty after shutting the Bulwer refinery in Brisbane. In 2014, the Tandara Spirit was also removed from service after restructuring associated with the Geelong refinery. These five ships once ensured that fuel produced in Australian refineries could be safely and reliably transported around the Australian coast by Australian seafarers operating under Australian law. Their loss has left Australia dependent on foreign-flagged vessels operating under foreign labour standards and foreign strategic priorities. At the same time, governments allowed refinery after refinery to shut down, facilities once provided a critical layer of national resilience were abandoned in the name of short-term corporate profit and free market ideology pushed by the political leaders of the Liberal National Coalition. Senior figures in the Conservative Party bear the direct responsibility for this national failure, including Angus Taylor, Matt Canavan, and Barnaby Joyce. Instead of defending Australia's national interests, coalition leaders allowed multinational oil companies to dismantle the infrastructure that kept Australian homes, farms, and factories supplied with fuel. The National Secretary of the Maritime Union of Australia, Jake Field, said the current geopolitical crisis should serve as a wake-up call. Quote, global conflict has exposed what we've warned about for years. Australia now depends on foreign tankers and overseas supply chain for the fuel we all rely on. MUA Assistant National Secretary Jamie Newlin called for urgent national action. Rebuild an Australian-flagged strategic tanker fleet, restore domestic fuel production, and adopt a genuine national fuel security strategy. Quote, a country that cannot transport its own fuel, cannot guarantee economic stability, emergency response or defence readiness, Newlin said, urging immediate intervention across the sector. As this program goes to air, Victoria's public school educators will have completed their first statewide strike in 13 years over pay and resourcing, with reports of over 35,000 people rallying at the steps of Trade Hall, constituting the largest rally ever for Victorian education workers, with a sea of red from Trades Hall to Parliament. Teachers rejected a government offer of 17% after a year of talks. The union had sought 35% over 4 years, citing pay well below other states and chronic underfunding. Educators described being at breaking point, saying that better pay and resourcing were essential for vulnerable students and warned the dispute could escalate if the government did not present a fair offer. The Education Department said most schools should be open, but with limited supervision in some. Community groups and other unions broadly supported the action, whilst the Premier urged teachers to abandon the strike because of its impact on families. 3CR's current affairs program, Solidarity Breakfast, interviewed AEU Regional Representative Daryl Croke ahead of the action on the steps of Trades Hall. We'll play that interview now, but tune in to Stick Together next week for in-depth coverage of the strike.
G'day, Daryl. How are you?
Oh, g'day. How are you?
All right. So this is a complete closing down of the public education system.
Well, I wish. We're not quite there yet. We're getting closer.
You're getting closer. And there's really important reasons for why the educators are going out on strike on Tuesday. So give our listeners some understanding of what's going on.
Well, schools are critically underfunded. We're $2.4 billion underfunded. One of the ways that's manifesting is the fact that teachers' wages and ES wages and principal wages are well behind those of other states. Some levels at least $10,000 to $15,000, depending on classifications, behind other states.
Yeah, that's pretty
We need smaller class sizes to be more effective. We need less face-to-face teaching time, so we're going to have more planning time. Principals are under the burden of extreme workload, and ES, the support staff, are undervalued and don't get paid, not even getting paid a paid lunch break while they're at work. So these are the things that are driving the dispute. We want to be respected at work, and we want to have dignity at work, and we're not treated very well by the department at the moment, and so we are taking industrial action.
Now, the thing about it is this has been boiling for quite a long time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. We've been banging this drum for at least 10 years since Gonski, saying we should get more money and we should be paying the people in the system a better wage.
The reasons for why you're under-resourced over a significant period of time, has the government at all given some understanding of why they believe that it's a reasonable position to be in?
Yeah, it's a strange debate where your opponent actually agrees with you but then doesn't concede. So if this is a debate, then everyone would agree that the system's underfunded, but they're not ramping up, they're not putting the money in place.
And it's kind of interesting, isn't it, because they've obviously been putting money into other things rather than taking dealing with core government business, which you'd have to say education is.
Yeah, I mean, health and education should be the first priority, looking after young people, looking after old people, looking after the community. I mean, that's what it should be about. I just want to context this by we've got a big upsurge in union membership. This has been a more exciting buzz than the last time that we took a rally, and the last time we rallied, we got between 10 and 15,000. We're going to probably double that. There's been a big upsurge in union membership since the start of the year, 30% up. The union has to then go get more people from Trades Hall to actually sign everyone up because we're overflowed at the moment. In my region, schools are usually off the radar, are stepping up with a dramatic increase in membership. So most schools in my region will be affected in some ways, from cancelling classes outright to only offering one or two year levels. Parents are getting on board as well. So what my region is doing is we're going to have our own contingent, and our contingent is going to assemble at the State Library. This is people in the Broadmeadows area, from Glenroy all the way up to Craigieburn, at the State Library at 9:50. Then we're going to march to the Trades Hall at 10:20 to look out for a Broadmeadows banner and the Red Peace banner from Glenroy. Parents are going to assemble at 10 a.m. at the corner of Rathdown Street and Victoria Parade for those who have small children. There'll be a quieter section of the rally for them. Now, the main assembly point is it going to be at Trades Hall, and that's at 10:30 a.m. And there's already been street closures, so please use public transport because that section of the city will be locked down. So that's really what the plan is, and expect a big and very loud rally.
Now to our main section, a translated excerpt from a webinar that USB, that's Unione Sindacale di Base, held on the 5th of March, entitled War on Women, the Price of Rearmament, is on our shoulders. This next piece was translated by my mum, Daniela, and will be spoken by comrade Laura. Thanks to all the women that make 3CR and radical unionism possible.
We will first hear from USB's Francesca Pulice and then the statement of Cinzia Della Porta. The economic crisis has reached unsustainable levels for years, and once again, it is women who are footing the heaviest bill. From the trauma of COVID-19 to the shift towards an advanced war economy, the path is clear. Constant impoverishment that primarily affects women workers. A war economy against women's work. We live in a context where the militarisation of public budgets is choking social services and wages. Whilst wars are being funded, pay rises in the public and private sectors are mere crumbs. Wage increases do not even cover half the rate of inflation. The government's response? Propaganda and meaningless incentives. The much-heralded tax relief for mothers with three or more children is a mere red herring, benefiting barely 500,000 to 600,000 female workers out of a total of 6 million mothers, iStat data 2026. The reality is quite different. We're facing a war against the poor and workers, and above all, against female workers. The noose of tariffs and inflation. Women workers are now exposed to the new risks of protectionism. US tariffs are hitting sectors with a high proportion of female workers, such as textiles and clothing, where women make up 60% of the workforce. According to ILO and WTO estimates, 38% of the jobs lost as a result of tariffs will be held by women. Furthermore, rising prices for agricultural and energy goods are fueling inflation that is eating away at already low incomes. With a gender pay gap that remains structural, the erosion of purchasing power is forcing women to reduce their working hours to make up for the lack of a welfare state that has now been dismantled. Motherhood and harassment, the blackmail of silence. The figures from the Inspectorate, INL 2024, are a declaration of social war. 70% of voluntary resignations, over 60,000 a year, are submitted by mothers with children under the age of three. 41% of young mothers work part-time, but for half of them, this is a necessity due to the lack of childcare services. Added to this is the scourge of harassment. 2 million women have suffered blackmail or harassment in their careers. According to recent IPSOS surveys, those who suffer harassment often lose their jobs. 28% resign out of desperation, and 14% are actually dismissed. For these reasons, USB reaffirms that the struggle for rights and wages must also be a struggle against war. Demanding a decent wage means demanding that workers' money goes back to the workers and is not squandered away on the war economy. It means fighting for a public and universal welfare system that frees women from the blackmail of domestic work and forced precariousness. We will not accept being the cannon fodder of this crisis. Against rearmament and exploitation, our response is constant mobilisation for wages, for rights, for an economy that serves life rather than destruction. These are the demands of our strike on the 9th of March. Quoting now from Cinzia Della Porta, "The 8th of March is a day of struggle historically linked to the struggles of women workers. It was Clara Zetkin who, in 1910, proposed that this date should become International Women's Day, referring to 8th of March, 1857, when women workers in the New York textile industry staged a massive strike. 40,000 women went on strike over their specific working conditions, which involved endless hours and low wages. Women's wages were lower than men performing the same tasks. There was a very severe crackdown, and CZ, a member of the German Social Democratic Party, proposed in 1919 that this should become International Women's Day. So this day belongs to us because it is a day of class struggle and ours as women in a class-based trade union organisation, an internationalist and class-based day. Once again this year, we have called a general strike for the occasion to restore this day's meaning. That is why the initiative we have organised today, War on Women, aims to highlight the specific context in which we find ourselves living today. To fight, and more specifically, to define our role within a systemic economic crisis where war now appears to be the only way out. In recent years, we spoke of a trend towards war. Today, we are faced with the stark reality of a state of war. This situation affects Italy and other Western countries, including those in the EU. We are witnessing the transformation of the economy into a war economy, with an increase in military spending. In Italy, we have gone from $25 billion in 2022 to $45 billion in 2025. This transformation is taking place within the education system, public research, and industrial production. We are witnessing a shift in resources and the transformation of society. They are trying to make us accustomed to the massacre of peoples, first and foremost the genocide of the Palestinian people. In a context such as this, which sees no other means of halting this process, the possibility actually emerges of building, growing, and strengthening the movement of workers who strongly oppose war. And we are doing so consistently through large-scale demonstrations, the strikes in September, October, and November, and also through the international port strike on 6th of February. We have transformed the upcoming referendum into a social no, with the no to war as its primary focus. Obviously, in this context, all the issues that directly affect us as workers and citizens and as a trade union organisation are severely impacted. We're talking about wages, healthcare, housing, welfare, pensions and all basic rights. In Italy, wages are the lowest in Europe, a generalised impoverishment that leads to a deterioration in women's conditions. The worsening economic and social situation and the impoverishment of society affect women most of all. The Italian government's responses show no intention of addressing these issues in any meaningful way, such as through wage increases or improvements to working conditions for women. In redundancy plans, women make up the majority of those being made redundant. And for working mothers, there are paltry bonuses available only under truly extreme circumstances. We have named this initiative War on Women because what is being done, particularly by the Italian government, but also generally by other EU governments, is a veritable war against the poor, against our class, against those we seek to represent. Another major factor is the tariffs imposed by the US, which primarily affect sectors with a high proportion of female workers, leading to job losses, inflation, and rising prices for essential goods. This situation is further exacerbated by the new conflict initiated by the US and Israel with their attack on Iran. The final point this context compels us to highlight is a factor that is crucial within a trade union organisation such as ours and the World Federation of Trade Unions, to which we are affiliated, a global trade union organisation that is anti-imperialist and anti-capitalist, working to link our daily struggles for wages, income, welfare, healthcare, research and education, and linking them to the overarching struggle against war, an inseparable element. This initiative has been launched by the women who run the help desks addressing violence, harassment and discrimination in the workplace, which we are setting up within the various offices of the USB and the ISIDE network. We have continued to carry out our work, but since the start of the war in Ukraine, under the slogan, "Lay down your weapons, raise your wages," we have established this close link between our material conditions and the war, which is now becoming even more decisive. The deadline of 14th of March is a further building block in what we are constructing as women workers, as a class of reference, and as those who struggle every day in the workplace.
That's it for Stick Together this week. If you want to catch up with our program, the podcast is available at 3cr.org.au. or at your favourite podcast site. You can contact the producers of the show at sticktogether3cr@gmail.com or by ringing 03 9419 8377 and leaving us a message. My name's Tobia, and remember, wherever you are, whatever you do, there is a union for you. And until next time, stick together.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.